Well, God gave the Israelites a great victory over the Philistines the day Jonathan and his armor bearer led that inspired charge against them. That's where we left off last time. Unfortunately, the Philistines would remain a troublesome enemy for Israel. The Philistines had lost the battle that day, but the war between these two nations was far from over, and there would be many battles to come, and Israel would not always win those battles. But the next battle with the Philistines that we want to take a look at is found in 1 Samuel chapter 17. I'm going to summarize this particular part of the story for us for the most part. We're not going to delve into details, but we're looking at the story in 1 Samuel chapter 17. So if you want to follow along. This is without doubt the battle that people are most familiar with from the Bible because it involves the famous fight between David and Goliath. The Philistines had gathered their forces together for this huge offensive against Israel. They pushed into Israelite territory, and they made their stand on one of the ridges above the Valley of Elah. Israel gathered their forces to meet the Philistine challenge, positioning themselves on the opposite ridge above the valley. So there's these two armies facing each other on the two ridges with this valley between them. And then this huge, powerful man came forward from the Philistine ranks named Goliath. He stood over 9 feet tall, was fully clad in armor from head to toe, and he had a full complement of the best weapons of the day. He shouted across the valley at the Israelite army, challenging them to send out their best warrior to fight against him one-on-one. The outcome of their fight would then determine the fate of their nations. The loser would be subject to the winner. Well, when King Saul and his men saw the size of this man and heard the challenge, they were overwhelmed with fear and discouragement. I mean, there was no one among the Israelites who stood a chance against this hulking beast. It wasn't a human being on the planet who stood a chance against him. These two armies, they sat on the two ridges facing each other for 40 days. And Goliath would come out every day and make the same challenge, and every day it went unchallenged by the Israelites. Well, about this time, a man named Jesse sent his youngest son, David, to the battle lines with a care package for his older sons who were in the army of Saul, and then to report back to him how the battle is going. Well, Jesse's youngest son, David, he had not been allowed to join the army with his brothers and be part of the battle. Someone had to stay home and help their father, Jesse, with the sheep. Well, just as David was arriving in the Israelite camp that day, the Philistine giant was coming forward to make his challenge again to Israel. And when David saw how this Philistine was mocking the Israelite army and their God, he was incensed. I mean, he was upset. He was ticked off. David wanted to know who was going to go out and shut the mouth of this Philistine. But there was no one who wanted any part of that fight. So David went to King Saul and said, "I'll fight him." And Saul, he tried to talk David out of it. David was a young, inexperienced fighter, while this Philistine was a seasoned veteran warrior. But David, he recounted how he had protected his father's flocks from lions and bears. Facing this Philistine would be no different as far as he was concerned. David said in 1 Samuel 17:37, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Can you guys hear okay in the back? Yeah. With the fans and all that? Okay. So Saul, he agreed to let David fight Goliath. And he offered David his armor and weapons. But David wasn't used to such things, so he chose instead to use the weapons that he was familiar with, which was his sling. He went down to the stream that was in this valley, and he chose 5 smooth stones. He put them in his shepherd pouch, and he headed across the valley to face Goliath. Well, when Goliath saw David, he laughed at him. He said, "Am I a dog? Do you come at me with sticks?" And David answered him, saying, verse 45, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down, and I will cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." David then ran quickly forward to meet the Philistine in battle. He put a stone in his sling, and he slung it, and he struck the Philistine in the head. He fell face down dead. He then took the Philistine's sword and cut his head off with it. But when the Philistine saw that their champion had been killed, they were filled with panic, and they started running for their lives. And the Israelite army, just like we noted this morning, courage is contagious. They were filled with this newfound courage, and they rushed across the valley after the Philistines, and they struck them down all the way back into Philistine territory. God had brought a great victory for Israel that day through David. There was something else of significance, though, that took place that day besides David killing the Philistine champion Goliath. After defeating the Philistine warrior, Saul had David brought to him so that he could learn more about who this young man was. He's obviously gotten everybody's attention. Well, when Saul was finished talking with David, there was someone else who wanted to meet him. Saul's oldest son, Jonathan. Jonathan knew he had found a brother of the deepest kind with David. As we've already noted, Jonathan and David were cut from the same cloth. They both had this tremendous faith in the Lord, which inspired their amazing confidence and courage. So in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 18, let's read that. 1 Samuel 18:1. It says, "As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the son of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul." The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. What a beautiful description of the connection that these two have with one another. As Jonathan had watched David face Goliath, he recognized a kindred spirit. He saw David's love and devotion for the Lord, and he saw his courage, his faith in the power of God. Do you remember what Jonathan said in 1 Samuel 14:6? That we looked at this morning, when he was talking with his armor bearer about the plan to challenge the Philistines, he said, "For nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." That's the same attitude that David has, isn't it? They both had stepped out in faith against impossible odds, believing that the Lord could and would save them. C.S. Lewis made the following observation about friends versus lovers. He said, "We picture lovers face to face, but friends side by side. Their eyes look ahead." He was making the point that lovers are taken up with each other. But friends, true friends, true brothers, on the other hand, are taken up with a common goal. a common mission, a common passion, a common devotion. And that's what we see in Jonathan and David. They're not caught up with one another. They're caught up with this common mission and passion. And that's what they're both looking at. And this knits their hearts together. Verse 2. So then Saul took him, David, that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. Jonathan makes a covenant with David this day, and this act of Jonathan giving David his robe, his armor, his sword, his bow, his belt, it's believed by some Bible scholars that it meant that Jonathan was in effect right then transferring his own status as the heir apparent to the throne to David. You are to be the next king, David. Now, others believe that giving his stuff to David is a gesture on the part of Jonathan that said, everything of mine is yours. And it reminds me of the attitude that those first Christians had with one another in Acts 2, where it says that they had all things in common with one another. Now, there's a question that has nagged me, and maybe it's nagging you a little bit too about these stories here, is where was Jonathan when Goliath was mouthing off? Why didn't Jonathan go down and face this giant? I mean, it's the kind of thing Jonathan would sign up for sure. Why didn't he step up and fight Goliath? Well, I've thought a lot about this, and here is what I think happened. I think that Jonathan had allowed Goliath to intimidate him just like the rest of the Israelite army. And when he saw this young man David step out and fight Goliath and take him down, and he saw what God did through David, Jonathan was cut to the heart. He said, that should have been me. I knew it should have been me. But I choked. I choked at the worst moment I could have choked. And I think he felt deeply burdened about that. And I think that also helps to explain why Jonathan, on that day, he gave David his place. He said, I choked. You did what I should have done. Everything of mine is yours. He knew on that day. Unfortunately, his father didn't know it so well, but he knew it on that day, that God had his hand on David in a very special way. He recognized that. They were close, close brothers, and we're going to see how close these two are. But I think that's what happened on that day. Well, at first, Saul was very enthusiastic about this newfound champion soldier, David, making him a commander in the Israelite army, and it seemed like everything that David attempted was successful. He quickly became a national hero. Everyone loved David. But Saul's enthusiasm was short-lived, because as the army was returning from a successful battle against the Philistines, the women came out of the cities to greet the army as it's coming back, and they start singing this little song that they had made up. Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. Well, it was all innocent enough on the part of the cheering crowds. They weren't trying to make some statement in all of that. They're just proclaiming their love both for their king and for their military hero. But that song, it ate away at Saul. They had attributed to him, they attributed to David more than to him. And his jealousy and his mistrust of David grew. Saul knew in his heart that the Lord had removed his blessing from himself as king. Samuel, the priest, had told him that in no uncertain terms, when he disobeyed the instructions of the Lord twice on two very critical moments. We looked at one of those. He said, your kingdom is not going to last. The Lord has chosen another to replace you, someone after his own heart. Remember, we read that this morning. Saul also knew in his heart that a special blessing from the Lord was obviously on the life of David. Now, if you remember the story of Cain and Abel that we looked at last night, then you might notice some similarities that there exist here between Cain and Saul toward their brothers, Abel and David. They both disobeyed God, while their brothers have pleased God with what they did. And this served to fuel their jealousy toward their brother. And just like in the case of Cain, so it was with Saul, that his jealousy grew into a hateful, vengeful, murderous rage. As David was playing music for Saul one day at the palace, all of a sudden, Saul's rage took over and he threw a spear at David, attempting to pin him to the wall with it. Well, David managed to dodge the spear. And David, not really with it yet about what was going on, he just assumes, oh, the king must be having a very bad day today. Well, Saul decided that it was in his best political interests for him to dispose of David in a more indirect and underhanded way than to just outright pin him to the wall with his spear. So he conceived a number of extremely dangerous military operations that he sent David on, hoping that he would get killed while carrying one of these out. But Saul underestimated both the skill of David as a warrior and the blessing of God on David's life, because David was successful in everything he did, exceeding Saul's expectations every time, defeating the enemy again and again in battle. And David's renown, his popularity with the people, it soared. And that caused Saul's jealousy, fear, and hatred of David to just grow. And this brings us to 1 Samuel 19. So if you flip over to 1 Samuel 19, verse 1. It says, and Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Therefore, be on your guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you. And if I learn anything, I will tell you. So finally, Saul gives up on this whole, you know, underhanded way of killing David. And he just basically straight up says, Jonathan, men, kill David. But Jonathan is not going to do that. He loved David. So he immediately goes to David and he warns him of what his father is up to. And in verse 4, it says, and Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. For he took his life in his hand, and he struck down the Philistine. And the Lord worked a great salvation for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause? And Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan. Saul swore, as the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan reported to him all these things, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as before. I don't want us to underappreciate what Jonathan has done here on behalf of David, because he's really putting his own life at risk by going to his father, the king, on David's behalf. And this is the true nature of brotherhood. The greatest expression of love there is when a man lays his life down for another. Jonathan was able to talk his father out of his rash orders to have David killed. But this would be short-lived. Because after returning from another battle against the Philistines, David is playing music for Saul again, when all of a sudden Saul went into another murderous rage and he tries to run David through with his spear again. This time he charges him with his spear. Well, David, he manages to escape unharmed, flees the palace, and he immediately has to go into hiding now. Since Saul, he sends men after him with orders to capture David and bring him back to the palace so Saul can kill him. Saul and his men, they discover that David is hiding in Ramah with the priest Samuel. So David is forced to flee again, but where will he go? He decides he needs to speak with his most dear and trusted brother, Jonathan. Jonathan had been able to reason with his father Saul once before. Maybe Jonathan can help again somehow. 1 Samuel 20, verse 1. Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my guilt? And what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" And he said to him, "Far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It's not so." But David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he thinks, 'Don't let Jonathan know, lest he be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." Jonathan knew nothing about his father the second time around, wanting to kill David. He keeps it a secret from Jonathan. Verse 4. Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." David said to Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit at table with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field till the third day at evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the clan.' If he says, 'Good, it will be well with your servant,' but if he is angry, then know that harm is determined by him. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. But if there is guilt in me, kill me yourself, for why should you bring me to your father?" And Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. If I knew that it was determined by my father that harm should come to you, would I not tell you?" So they come up with this plan to determine and reveal the true intentions of Saul towards David. In verse 10, the story continues. It says, "Then David said to Jonathan, 'Who will tell me if your father answers you roughly?' And Jonathan said to David, 'Come, let us go out into the field.' So they both went out into the field. And Jonathan said to David, 'The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if he is well disposed toward David, shall I not then send and disclose it to you? But should it please my father to do you harm, the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also if I do not disclose it to you and send you away that you may go in safety. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die, and do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth.' Then Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, 'May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies, I want us to notice that Jonathan knows that David is to be the next king of Israel, taking his father's place rather than himself. Not only does Jonathan acknowledge that David is to be the next king, but he plays this very important role in making sure that it happens. He works against his own father, helping David escape from Saul. He actually establishes a covenant with David, who his father considers his enemy. Jonathan prays for the blessing of God upon David's coming reign. There's no jealousy toward David about this. Jonathan is fully submitted to the will of the Lord about his own future. I ask you, how many people do you know that would handle this the way Jonathan handles it? I don't know about you, but there are very few people I could think of. But again, this is the way our brotherhood in the Lord is supposed to be. Jonathan and David's humility and selfless attitude, they're a model for us. It's in stark contrast with Cain's attitude toward his brother Abel. Remember the story? His jealousy inspired him to kill his brother. Here, Jonathan's humility and selfless attitude inspire him to work towards saving the life of his brother. Just the opposite. Another comparison between Cain and Abel's story and Jonathan and David's story is this one. Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out into the field." And then he murdered him there. And we see here Jonathan say to David, "Let's go out into the field." But rather than murdering David there, Jonathan devises a plan for saving his life. And he pledges his love and his loyalty to David. Verse 17. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. This is the third time that the love of these two is described this way. We have in their love for one another a picture of the kind of connection that Jesus wants us to have for each other too. In John 13:34, remember Jesus said, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. And by this, people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." This love that Jonathan and David have for each other is the kind of love that Jesus is calling us to for our brothers. Verse 18. Then Jonathan said to him, "Tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. On the third day, go down quickly to the place where you hid yourself when the matter was in hand, and remain beside the stone heap. And I will shoot 3 arrows to the side of it, as though I shot at a mark. And behold, I will send the young man, saying, 'Go, find the arrows.' If I say to the young man, 'Look, the arrows are on this side of you, take them,' then you're to come. For as the Lord lives, it is safe for you, and there is no danger. But if I say to the youth, 'Look, the arrows are beyond you,' then go, for the Lord has sent you away. And as for the matter of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever." So he arranges this signal with David. Like, after I talk to my father, I'll be out there shooting these arrows, and this will be our signal. If I say, "Come on in with those arrows, but they're beyond you." So David hid himself in the field. And when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat. The king sat on his seat, as at other times, on the seat by the wall. Jonathan sat opposite, and Abner sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Yet Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought, something has happened to him. He's not clean. Surely he's not clean. But on the second day, the day after the new moon, David's place was still empty. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, "Why has not the son of Jesse come to the meal, either yesterday or today?" Jonathan answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem He said, "Let me go, for our clan holds a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. So now, if I have found favor in your eyes, let me get away and see my brothers. For this reason, he's not come to the king's table." Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." Then Jonathan answered Saul his father, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him. So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. And Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had disgraced him. In the morning, Jonathan went out into the field to the appointment with David, with him a little boy. And he said to his boy, "Run and find the arrows that I shoot." And as the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the boy came to the place of the arrow that Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the boy and said, "Is not the arrow beyond you?" And Jonathan called after the boy, "Hurry, be quick, do not stay." So Jonathan's boy gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the boy knew nothing, only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his weapons to his boy and said to him, "Go and carry them to the city." And now, we've come to this moment that we want to focus on for a minute. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times, and they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. Then Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever.'" And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. This is one of the most sad and moving scenes in all of the Bible. As these two brothers who love each other like their own souls are being ripped apart by the insanity of Saul. Jonathan and David must part company now. Jonathan will return to fulfill his responsibilities to his father. David will now go into exile, living as a fugitive, constantly on the run from Saul and his men, being hunted like an animal, enduring great hardship and loneliness. We have another parallel here with Cain and Abel's story. After Cain murdered his brother, the Lord punished Cain by sending him into exile as a fugitive, away from his family and the people he loved, constantly on the move, enduring hardship and loneliness. But there's a big difference in why those two men go into exile. David faces the same punishment, but not as the judgment of God upon him, but as the result of Saul's jealous hatred of David. In closing this evening, as we reflect on this story, we identify some important aspects of the kind of brotherhood that we're to have with one another in the Lord. David and Jonathan, they shared a common viewpoint about life, a common passion. They were living for the same thing. They were submitted to the same authority over their life. They both were submitted to the Lord. They loved the Lord. They followed the Lord's commands. They fought for the same reasons. They gave their lives for the same things. They were willing to lay their life down for one another. They put the well-being of each other above their own. They rejoice in the success of each other. and they wept with the tragedy of each other. There was no jealousy between them. They were united under the Lord's purpose and call for their lives. They loved each other deeply. In this story, we see two men who find themselves caught in a whirlwind of trouble, and they find strength to face it together as brothers.